This is the Celestial Goddess Podcast. Let's grow and show up with more compassion. I love you.
Blessings. Welcome. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here right now. But I don't bunch. I have the amazing Leah Glanz with a Z with us. She is bringing such a powerful energy in here today. I'm already crying and cracking my heart open. And already she just started with a powerful message she brought me. And I feel like a lot of us can relate to this, is if you tone it down, life cannot hear you. So don't tone it down. Be yourself and broadcast your essence. So with that being said, let's introduce the amazing Leah.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Like,
it's very exciting. I'm drinking out of a unicorn mug, feeling very lovely and magical today.
So magical. And you're bringing a lot of magic in with your presence today. I mean, yeah, the magic is strong. Like, you already know. So we're going to have to dive deep. So why don't you tell everyone about yourself?
Oh my gosh. What to say?
Where to begin?
So, let's see. I am kind of a new yogi. I just started my practice, my teaching, all of the things. I started all of the things probably around 2017. And my intro to yoga was really through the gateway of wellness and Ayurveda. Just like a lot of people that I see come to the studio, they know something's not right, like with their body or their nutrition or something. So I was blessed to encounter the lovely Greta Hill, who is my Ayurvedic coach and also mentor yoga teacher here in Seattle. And through that pathway, just healing my body internally, she led me to the pathway of Rasa yoga. And Rasa yoga is something that, like, I don't even know. Yoga's hard. I don't want anything to do with yoga.
I know, right?
And she mentioned that there was going to be an online teacher training. And like I said, yoga's hard. I had no interest in teaching at all, but I knew that I trusted her. And I think that's the most important thing, is to really connect with a soul that you trust, mm-hmm. in a way to sort of open the door or the pathways to learning more about yourself and discovery. And I did that online training, and Rasa yoga was mind-blowing. To me, Rasa essentially means the nectar of life or the juiciness of life.
I love that.
And there are, I'm going to say, 9 rasas. So there's love, joy, courage, sadness, anger, fear, disgust, wonder, and peace.
Wow.
And it's the remembrance that life is full. And we have to experience all of those things to be fully integrated. And so through that online training, I discovered not only the asanas, the movement, the postures, but how to reconnect with my breath, how to meditate in stillness, how to chant and sing mantras, the song of the heart, mudras, yoga for your hands, divine gestures, and so much more. So I was... For those of you who don't know me, like, I am a larger body. And so yoga to me was always like, not attainable. There's no way I'm doing a handstand. No way. And so through these other pathways, I discovered that yoga really was for me. And Rasa yoga is a tantric practice, which just means like integrating the whole. And it's so easy to be disconnected from parts of self, but when we can pause and really acknowledge, like, all of those feelings, all of those emotions, the 9 rasas that I mentioned, we can start to crack open those parts of our heart that maybe we've disowned or ignored for so long. So I became completely in love and fascinated with that practice, and continued on to my in-person 200 and then 300 with Greta. Rasa yoga was founded by Sianna Sherman, and it's essentially the lineage is Anasara, and beyond that, Iyengar. So it's a very alignment-based, but realizing that you need more mm-hmm. than just safe alignment. You need the juiciness of life to really discover all of the beauty that yoga has to offer. So that's my story of where it started, how it came to be. But through my continued training, I really wanted to dive deeper into making yoga accessible because, like I said, larger body, not every studio or every practice seemed right for me. And so I continued to move into the gateway of accessible yoga. So making yoga available for those who maybe did have a larger body, maybe had a disability, or for folks that maybe couldn't even get on the floor or out of bed. Because every person deserves, you know, that right to experience this practice in their body, their heart, and their mind space. And that continued into prenatal and birth wisdom yoga.
So you did birth wisdom yoga? What? I didn't even know that was a thing. Oh, you're teaching me something.
So yeah, it's, you know, yoga is not something that you just experience in the four walls of a studio. Mm-hmm. It's a life practice. It's a journey. You create your sadhana, your spiritual practice every day. And even just right now that we're like kind of cracking our hearts open, sharing our practice right now together, yeah. Like it's really honoring this space. So.
Wow. That's just so amazing. I just feel like there's so much wisdom in everything that you're sharing and what you're bringing to the world. And I'm just so grateful to know someone like you who is introducing this kind of stuff because I feel like it's not talked about enough. I mean, I didn't even know what Rasa Yoga was or any of these things before I met you. And you just started kind of dropping these wisdom nuggets on me. And what the first word you taught me was Karuna, which you said was an abode of the heart. And that still stuck with me, one of the four abodes of the heart. What is an abode of the heart? What does that mean?
It's like your home. And if you think about your home, it has so many different rooms, right? Oh, okay. There's different ways to love and to experience compassion and vastness of your heart. Karuna is compassion. It's kindness in a way to just be present with someone. Like we're just present here, right? Allowing each other to be completely who we are in kind of that space of grace, like, of non-judgment. I'm not going to add my two cents in. You don't need to tell me, you know, how to be in any way. We're just loving each other as we are.
I love that. So what are the other three abodes?
The other three abodes. So we have the overarching is loving kindness.
Okay.
And so if you've ever heard the metta meditation, metta is another word for loving kindness. It's like, you know, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be safe, may you be peaceful and at ease. It's kind of just that, like, just nice, warm feeling.
Yes.
But it starts with self. Like, that's a wonderful meditation or a mantra to have in the morning, like, of just like, hey, giving yourself this permission to be happy, to be at peace,
yes,
to be safe, to be at ease, right? Like, we need permission from ourselves to be all of those things. And sometimes we forget about that.
Totally.
Or we feel guilty about it.
100%.
So we start with ourselves and we send it out to maybe our loved ones, our friends. And then we send it out to the community, right? Mm-hmm. Yoga is not it's a solitary practice. It can be. But we do this kind of to make the world a better place. You know, not to sound too cheesy, but that's really what it is.
Absolutely.
Like, spread the wealth.
Yes.
Right?
And, like, that's how we're in service to humanity.
Yes.
You know, and like you said, it is kind of like that step of having that compassion for yourself, having that compassion for others, and then spreading it all across the world.
Heck yes.
Heck yes.
So and you have this overarching loving kindness, and then you have Karuna,
mm-hmm.
and then you have Mudita.
Mudita.
That just sounds fun to say.
I love it.
Mudita.
Mudita.
Mudita is, it's a way of sympathetic joy.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you think of it as like, you have such a nice house. I really love your house. Oh my gosh, congratulations on buying that house. And I'm smiling to you outright, but internally I'm thinking, shit, I wish I had enough money to buy a house. Or like, I've worked hard all my life. Why do I still live in this studio apartment? It's like, I'm saying congratulations, but internally I'm not in line, right? So how can we honestly be in step with this acknowledgement of I've got my blessings and you've got yours? Because you're blessed with something doesn't mean that I'm less than or in the state of lack. Right? It's the boundaries that we set with each other. It's such a greatest form of respect to say, like, this is where I end and you begin. And just because you have this thing doesn't mean that I don't have a thing.
Right. Like,
yeah, it's this form of joy that I should allow you to feel good about yourself and support that. And I love teaching this a couple weeks ago, we were in the Luna Room. Like more of a quiet, introspective space at Seoul. And we were in yin. Simultaneously, hatha is going on, and everybody comes out of the hatha room. They're really alive and loud and boisterous. And sometimes that can be really hard for students to be like, oh, wait, I'm trying to meditate here. And there's people going crazy. But it's like, hey, they just had a great class. They are so excited about their practice. Everybody's in community, laughing, enjoying their time. Mm-hmm. And so we send our hearts out to them. Like, yes, you got what you came for and probably so much more. And we revel in that for ourselves as well. And so when we can learn to share that enjoyment and acknowledge that it's vast, it's available for all people, then we realize, like, okay, I'll have my time. Or I have my time.
Yes.
So does that make sense?
It does, 100%. And I think that's so, you know, powerful to name, because how often does that happen? That's almost like that mean girl, you know, oh, I love your bracelets. Like, ew, that's fucking disgusting. You know, it literally, how often, right? And then like kind of that manipulation, and it's interesting because I feel like, you know, energy doesn't lie. Energy is so strongly felt. So someone can be saying these things to your face, but yet you feel all that energy being projected at you from
Absolutely.
Their internal state. And it's like, how confusing is that when you're just trying to be in that compassion, be in that love, be in that peace for others, you know,
yes.
wishing, you know, like you said, may you be happy, may you be well, and like genuinely meaning that. And we all deserve that. And, you know, knowing that, I love what you said, you know, it's like, you have your thing, but like, that doesn't mean I don't have my thing. And there shouldn't be that hierarchy of, you know, like, oh, I'm better than you or whatever. It's like, no, we're all on this journey and we're all doing our best. Like, we just want to be acknowledged and seen
right.
and loved.
And that
you know.
Can show up so often in the yoga studio of that place of competition. And I think a lot of people, we may lose a lot of yogis because of that. Maybe they don't. They walk into a studio and the automatic feeling is to maybe not feel welcome,
mm-hmm.
or like, oh, I don't look a certain way. I don't have the cool yoga clothes or the right mat or whatever. And then you step into this room full of mirrors and it's all right there.
Yeah.
And so we can get into the space of looking around and really moving into that place of imposter syndrome,
yes.
right? Of like, I don't belong here. This is not my family. I have no right to practice. My body will never do the things that I see his body do. Like, I have no right. And that's not what yoga is. Yoga is about bringing all parts of the self that you maybe don't acknowledge or don't respect back home. And I think the biggest part to remember is that it's not specific to a new yogi, or it's not specific to a certain body type, color, age, ability. It affects the teacher as well. Like, we all experience that imposter syndrome, right? And that's not something that goes away.
Right.
And we're constantly in this space of feeling like, are we good enough?
Mm-hmm.
Do we deserve this? Do we have a right to be doing what we're doing? Right.
Right. And I can honestly name that I, you know, like, I mean, yeah, I have imposter syndrome, and I, you know, and I love that you said, you know, it is always a journey. It's like, even though we do this soul work, I crack my heart open, still catch myself feeling not worthy enough to teach, not worthy enough to really broadcast my essence when yet, I mean, that, yeah, that's just the journey and the challenges. I mean, I'm just, oh, I'm just feeling so much right now. And
it's the self-doubt, right?
Self-doubt.
The self-doubt of not knowing your shit.
Not knowing
which
your
is,
shit.
Well, we do. Like,
right.
It doesn't matter how many trainings you go through or, you know, what clothes you have or the length of your hair or the size of your waist. It is... like, are you...
I love it. I'm going to clear my throat really quick.
Over here.
Oh,
place.
My heart's under. I'm like rubbing or burning Paleo Santo. I don't know. Anyways.
I'm a collector or a consumer of trainings. I constantly feel like, oh, well, I need to know more about this in order to teach it.
Yes.
Should you know your stuff? Yes, you should. But do you have to be an expert to share your essence? No.
Mm-hmm.
We're essentially like a conduit. We're an in-between. And I'm constantly saying, like, I'm just your guide through your practice. I am not the divine up here on this throne showing you the way. I'm just like opening the door. And for one, I think that takes a lot of pressure off the teacher. Right? Because being in the seat of the teacher is tough.
Yeah.
Right?
So I'm like, I'm not going to have to do it. I'm like, I need to know more. Like you said, be this expert. But it's like, I feel like I'll never be an expert. I'm always a student. Always.
You need to be able to be spacious and create this platform for people to do their own deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in itself takes some time to understand how to hold space. And just like having this warm, open heart and being a people person means like, yes, if somebody can look at you and feel invited, like that is the step. Like that's what you need to present. And that in itself is this loving kindness that we strive to practice. We don't need to be able to have all the answers. In fact, I think, you know, that's part of the scary thing of being a teacher. People asking like, oh, can you diagnose this? Can you tell me how to fix that? Can you tell me what I need to do?
Right.
They want these hard answers, but no, go see your doctor. Like consult your physician.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't have to have all the answers right now. We're doing the work right along with our students. And I think that once the teacher and the student realizes that, it can create this really lovely bond. I love teaching because my students constantly remind me that I'm right along with them. I'm doing the work. I need to continue to do the work. This is a practice. It's not just practice in the studio. It's practice we do all day long.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And part of, you know, allowing yourself that grace goes into the next abode with, which is upiksha.
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 Which is essentially equanimity. I'm going to love you right where you are.
Yeah.
For who you are. And if you're not receptive to that, I'm not going to pout. I'm not going to like dust you off and cast you out of my heart. And I think some teachers get really frustrated with that of like, no, I told you to do this, or I gave a cue. Why are you doing your own thing?
Right.
And that can shift your energy in the classroom, right? But Upiksha asks us to show up in different ways, right? It asks us to be vast in our love, to release whatever story that we create about the situation. Like you were sharing with me that you're a little bit nervous.
Totally.
This morning, right? Like,
yeah.
We have a tendency to paint this entire storyboard.
Absolutely.
Before something happens. Oh, the anxiety, right?
Yes.
And like, let that go.
Let it go. Let it go.
It's so easy to say.
It's easy to say, right? But then when it actually comes into dipping into yourself, trying to let that story go, let that go, it's like you realize how attached you are. It's almost like I'm in a quicksand. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get out. It's like, wants to play back. Remember? Remember you're not good enough? Remember you can't do that? Remember you don't know what you're talking about? You know? And it's like, yeah.
Yes. So, I've been, this happened to me quite a bit when I first started teaching. I was doing these karma classes and I wasn't getting paid, right, or anything. It was experience. And I'm thinking like, oh, I'm hot shit. I just learned all the things and I'm ready to share all the things with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a new yogi, I got so excited to share like these stories of the deities and, you know, teach people mantras and mudras and all of the mythic part of yoga. And sometimes people aren't ready for that. It's a little bit scary.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, wait. Why aren't you receptive to this?
Yeah.
And so then I started to like harden my heart a little bit and wonder like, is this my pathway? Maybe, you know, they weren't responsive or they kind of gave me a look, or maybe I've had people walk out of the room.
Really?
And Upiksha asks us not to lose our composure in the midst of this difference or adversity or difficult situations, right? Like, how often are you in traffic and you've been like singing the song, being really like bibbidi bobbidi, fun time, and then all of a sudden your middle finger is up, you're honking your horn, like not yoga, right?
Right.
Like, no, that's cool. Maybe you have a thing happening and I'm going to let you do you and I'm going to just stay in my grounded space.
Mm-hmm.
I think as yogis, we have to practice that more than anybody, is that sense of groundedness in ourselves so we don't allow ourselves to be swept up in the chaos.
Absolutely.
We observe it and we see how we can kind of churn through our practices and allow it to be a learning experience, but we don't get swept up.
Yes. Yeah. Transmute the energy. It's like, is it right? Because then the word that came to me is the Maya, right? Because the Maya is like that dense, stagnant, like sleeping energy,
mm-hmm.
the sheeple asleep or in that chaos, in that negativity, in that complaining energy. And so, yeah, just talking about that, it's like once you finally gain some awareness and you start to see that dense energy, that negativity. You see how often people are flipping people off. I mean, just yesterday I was driving and I heard an ambulance and my light turned green to turn left, but I heard an ambulance. What if an ambulance just came shooting across in front of me? Like I waited to see where it's coming from and I see the person behind me throw their hands up, go, honk at me. It's like, yo, like, are you supposed to pull over when you hear an ambulance? Like, simmer down.
Everyone's in a hurry.
Everyone's in a hurry. And that's, right, kind of like that Western American culture as well, is quick, quick, quick. Okay, you did this. Now what's next? Now what's next? Like, oh, you got to grind, 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 grind.
Speed gets trapped in the body.
Speed gets trapped in the body. And honestly, I can name that's probably, I mean, I've been go.
I know you haven't sit still.
I can't sit still. I know. I need some more yin practice.
We see that when we're at a stoplight, right? We're like finger drums or we're checking our phone.
Right.
Or, okay, I'm like reapplying my makeup.
We
can't
whatever.
Sit still.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this when you're forcing people to take their shavasana,
yeah.
right? Like, I can't. My eyes are blinking. I'm checking my watch.
Let people know. Maybe they don't know what shavasana is.
Okay, so corpse pose. You're just like laying on your back at the end of practice, allowing your body to receive all of the things that you just did. It's just this nice, wonderful piece of your practice. It's not optional.
No.
Like, allow yourself to take it.
Yeah.
And so I love to teach this in a hot room to people that maybe are used to taking their final resting pose.
Yes.
And I don't, like, stand at the back of the door and say, namaste, see you later. Stay as long as you want. No. I force you to lay in it, and then I close practice. Because when you can't sit still or lay still, that means you need it the most.
Right.
You have to give yourself permission to find that stillness and that relaxation. And when we, you know, if we can't sit still, we're constantly moving. We feel like we need to do more.
Right.
I need to do more. I need to prove something. I need to be better than this.
Yeah.
Or I have to accomplish. And I think that the more we focus on that, the less we lose track of how important and how vital it really is to just pause.
Absolutely.
Right? Just pause into the breath. Allow your entire being to find this open spaciousness of just being present. Mm-hmm. It's it, again, back to Karuna, just be present with yourself. And, you know, speed can get trapped in the body in so many different ways of that. If you're just sitting on the couch and your mind is racing, like constantly creating all of these to-do lists, mm-hmm. you're never really enjoying the moment. Like, you can be sitting with your kids, your partner, your cat, whatever, and they're just looking at you like, love me. But you're in a totally different space, right? Especially as Geminis. Like, I'm having this conversation, but my mind is somewhere else.
100%. That happens to me all the time.
Just find this space in this current moment, right? This space is just where you need to be. Nowhere else, not in the past, not in the future, but here. And sometimes when we stop, that's when it gets uncomfortable, right? That's when we're faced with ourselves or thoughts of just like how maybe what we had experienced today is caught in a certain part of our body, like the tension in our shoulders or the heaviness in our hearts or that knot in the gut. Like, what is that? Like, your body has this beautiful intuitive nature, this instinctual nature, but when we're constantly moving, we're not connected to it.
Mm-hmm. We can't receive it.
It's here, but we're ignoring it.
Absolutely.
Because it's hard to be present with all of the stuff that's here.
See, it is a lot funny because yet we think it's easier to keep distracting ourselves, keep running, going, but yet the simple thing of just stopping being present yet is the hardest. Like, do not do anything. Be right here and right now. Like, why is that so difficult, you know?
Because all the shit. All you're the sitting
shit.
In it.
The shit, that, literally. That,
yeah. I mean, it's the quicksand of what are all the things that you put off.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you walk into a room that you maybe haven't been into, and you're like, oh, look at all this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Like, look at all this stuff that I've been avoiding for so long. You know, we have to, if we don't stay present within our practice every day, stuff piles up and it gets harder to address. Right?
Sounds like we're hoarding in
our
soul.
We are. We're hoarding. And like, on the way here, I drove by. It was like the hoarder's corner or something like that.
Oh.
And I was like, I love all of those shows. I love all of those shows of people like really experiencing life in certain ways, whether it's hoarders or I'm like my
600-pound
Yes! My 1,000-pound sister, all of those things. It's interesting to observe human nature because regardless of whatever the thing is that they're struggling with, it's reflected in each of us,
absolutely.
Right? Like we're hoarding things in our lives or our hearts that we don't want to deal with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have struggled all of my life with my body, whether it be through food or addictions in different ways. Mm-hmm. And those never really go away.
Yeah.
They never really go away. It's just that you find different tools in your toolkit to deal with the emotions, the sensations, the tendency as they arise. Because if you don't, then you open the door and there's all your shit piled up,
literally.
Right? And it can be really tough to address when it's so much, right? And when it's so much, that's when we become overwhelmed. And then we just stop and say, you know what? It's too hard. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't deal with this. Part of that too, this is my Gemini mind. They just went somewhere else.
Oh, this guy's beautiful.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Yes. Hey, no, that's okay because I know we need to take a quick break really quick.
Perfect timing.
So, yeah, we'll be right back. And welcome back. Thank you so much for being here. We just wanted to dive into complacency and disrupting the complacency. And I feel like Leah has a really great view on this. So please explain more.
I'm totally spaced out. Like,
we're both Geminis, so yeah, fun fact there. Just a little airy.
Yeah. So we were talking about kind of like the space of, sorry, of being welcomed into kind of yoga space, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's part of making yoga accessible, right? And what you feel might be a safe environment is maybe not safe for me. Mm-hmm. And that's such a touching word, right? Because we all have our traumas, we all have our stories, and people love to use the word triggered, right?
Like, yes, triggered.
Everyone's triggered.
All day long, everyone's so triggered these days. Can't really say anything.
But you know, but the part of this too is like finding our space, one, to feel safe, and then two, to feel like you belong.
Yes.
Right.
Everyone just wants to belong.
And not to be just present, like, oh, okay, yeah, I belong here because it's yoga and I want to do yoga, but to feel like you're part of a family. As we were talking before all this podcast business of like the term Kalyana Mitra.
Yes.
Soul friend.
Soul friend.
I am connected with other yogis because we're doing the work together.
Yes.
And that takes a lot of vulnerability and continued work. Like, we have to keep working. Mm-hmm. That's something that it doesn't just happen on our mat. It doesn't just happen in the yoga space. It happens at home. But when we can find a community that's on that same journey with us, that's when the shift happens. It really happens, right? And so it's so important to really seek out a place where you can feel at home, feel connected, find your soul friends to embark on this journey of yoga with, because it's not just an exercise. It's not just about burning some calories after a long day. It can be, but it can be so much more,
totally.
Right? And everybody deserves that opportunity. So if we can make this space inclusive and accessible in a way to allow people the opportunity to dive into their hearts in a way that maybe they haven't before.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
It is. And like truly feeling that support.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like an easy fix, like a one and done. It's, you know, you acknowledge we're all doing this together. We all got our own stuff. And yeah, let's take a deep breath here together real quick. we're sniffing. Yeah, we got some essential oils we're sniffing here.
And so we were talking about the word bodhisattva.
Bodhisattva, yeah.
Just say it a couple more times.
Bodhisattva. I am the bodhisattva. Hey, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There's a song.
Yes. We're going to listen to a song after this called Bodhisattva.
So as yoga teachers, you might think like, oh, I've arrived. I've done the thing. I've got my certificate.
Yeah.
I've got this grand knowledge. And now I can stop. Like, no. So the bodhisattva is the, you explain, like, holding the door open, right?
Yes, yes, that's how I see it, is like, bodhisattva is someone who is, like, reaching that enlightenment, but I'm not just going alone. It's like, I want to wait behind, hold the door open, and allow everyone to come with me, because we're all going together, we're all ascending together, we're all growing together. So it's like that power of just, like, loving people and assisting everyone, right? It's like that community, and like you said, and just coming together and bleeding, you know, having that grace. I don't know.
You're like my cheesy smile. I'm just, yes.
You're distracting
Tell
me.
Tell
yes.
me more.
Yeah. Your face is distracting me.
Okay.
Give me the resting bitch face. No.
And, you know, one of the things that I just love about teaching in studio is seeing that community grow. Of maybe somebody walks into the studio for the first time, or they're new to yoga and they're really nervous. You can just see it in their energy. They're
totally
really nervous. Like, I don't know. Do I belong here? Should I do this? Am I ready for a hot room? Am I ready for a flow? Am I ready for something that's different
yeah.
or new to them. And then after class, they come out and they've got that yogi glow.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh,
I did it. I didn't die.
And
I didn't pass out. And other people come up and they're like, good job. Like, I saw you like really striving or really just being present. And that's not something that you need from the yoga teacher. I think so many of us need that pat on the back or
validation. Yeah.
Like, yes, you belong here, but it's so beautiful when it happens by other students because we are in that journey together, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a competition. It doesn't need to be a competition, right?
Yeah. Community over competition every day.
And that starts with self,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you're staring in the mirror, looking at yourself, judging the self.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, I have no business wearing these pants or these shorts, or like, look at the stuff hanging out the side of my bra, or oh my gosh, I need to get my eyebrows done. It's like, stop.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
That's not why you're standing in front of the mirror with everything being visible. It's just so you can show up with what you have and love every inch of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the practice should teach you
mm-hmm.
or should expose you to, is to say, like, oh my gosh, I've been blessed with whatever I have right now. And I'm going to learn to love it. And I'm going to learn to use this vessel of light as a way to really honor what I've been given and allow my inner essence, right, to shine
yes,
outwards.
Yes.
So the past couple weeks, as we've been working through the abodes of the heart, I've been teaching some mudras. And so it's like Pushpanjali mudra. Like, you just open your hands up, palms up out of your heart. It's like an offering from your
oh,
heart center.
Yeah.
Pushpanjali, it's like an offering of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an offering of your truest essence of the heart. And that's such a vulnerable place to be, right?
Totally.
It's easier to live above all of that, but if we can ground ourselves and allow that truest essence to come out, even if it's uncomfortable for people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as we get into big discussions as yogis, things can get really uncomfortable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about making yoga accessible, but also, once we start teaching yoga to the masses, we have to honor the practice. And that's where the cultural appropriation comes in.
Yeah.
And you're like,
oh, yeah.
Good.
Trigger word.
It's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, but let's talk about it.
Okay.
But we don't want any cookie cutter bullshit.
Don't be.
Let's be real. Sorry, I'm like, keep it 100.
Oh my gosh.
Love you for you. We all have an individual piece of this, like, bigger, grander puzzle, right?
Right. And so, like, what is cultural appropriation? What
yes.
is what is that? What does that mean? What does it mean to you? What does it mean on the bigger picture? And we see this in yoga all the time: is drawing pieces of somebody's spiritual culture, their religious practice, whatever, and we draw it in and we remove pieces that maybe make us feel uncomfortable or that we don't want to give over to our students because we're going to be afraid of their reaction. And we put it in this nice little package and we slap a big price tag on it.
Profiting.
Yeah. So just know, if you come to any of my classes, it's going to be packaged. Not just with the asana, the movement. We're going to om it out. We're going to sing mantras. We're going to do mudras. Yoga for your hands. But it's also like a gesture from your heart
mm-hmm.
that can be used in meditation. We are going to unpack this really beautiful practice of yoga that makes it accessible. Because maybe in your body, you're not ready to move yet. But maybe you can breathe. Like, we all need to learn how to breathe, right?
Yeah.
In our daily life, we need to breathe. And we need to find stillness in meditation. And we all have a song of the heart, right?
Mm.
That we need to share. We need to sing out. It may not be beautiful to everybody's ears, but it's yours.
That's your essence.
Right? We're not living in that cookie cutter. We're going to unpack all of this that is you and allow it to just be visible, right? So just know that, you know, it's really important for yoga teachers to honor where their practice came from, to acknowledge where their practice came from. Sometimes, just as in a family tree, maybe every branch isn't so beautiful. Maybe there's some trauma associated with it, or branches are maybe a little rotted, but we still look back. We still honor it. We still acknowledge it, because that's where the healing can come from, and that's where a deeper appreciation of healing can take place. And I speak about that in my moon circles as well. Like, this is so important, especially for women, to maybe if they didn't have such a great relationship with their mother, their grandmother, whatever, it's acknowledging that they came out of that tree.
Wow.
Right? We have to heal what was broken before we can move forward.
Yeah, and I love the analogy. I think that's a great way to put it. You know, I feel like, especially all of this kind of, you know, ancient wisdom, right? I feel like it's so much more digestible when we put it into that type of analogy, or put it into something that's more tangible that we can envision. And then it's like, oh, that does make sense. So let me look up at my tree, and let me maybe start to give some care to some of these branches, start to water some of these seeds, and start to give some love and, you know, and forgiveness too,
right?
Like, forgiveness is huge.
Forgive what was happening, you know, what was happening is, it goes back to that equanimity of upiksha, of like, oh yeah, I saw what happened, but I'm not going to live by that story.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, every branch of yoga has an unsavory piece or,
it's a good way to put it.
You know, an unsavory piece that happened. But it doesn't necessarily mean that's what the practice is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to acknowledge where it stemmed from, but to, you know, to own it still. Like, yes, this is great. We don't have to make everything perfect.
Exactly.
Not everything needs to be beautiful, and not everything needs to be completely whitewashed. Right?
Yes.
Like, everything is beautiful and perfectly pictured on Instagram. No, it's messy. It's fucking messy.
It's fucking messy.
So I love when people say, it's like, this is the Instagram post, but this is really what was happening.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Like, oh my gosh, we're in this podcast, but it was not pretty before we got here.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Totally. I was crying and like having, Leah, you definitely brought out some reflections inside of me, and thank you for that.
It's really important for people to know that yoga is hard, not just on the body, but on the soul.
Oh yeah.
But that's where the beautiful changes are made, right?
Absolutely.
There has to be destruction before the renewal and the life happens.
Yes.
We have to tear it down and humble ourselves to acknowledge what's really taking place in order to build a stronger structure and to grow from that.
Yes. Ah. Oh. Just like rebuilding that foundation so we can have, right? It makes sense. Like, it's like, you don't want to build a house on this faulty, I don't even know, like on a swamp. You know, you want to build a house like just on some.
Okay,
right.
Well, there
you
go. The swamp, the mud, the moss that the lotus can grow out of.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
You know, we churn through all the mud and the muck and the nastiness, the dark waters, to start to blossom up.
Yes.
And really peel back the layers of our heart and who we truly are and who we can be with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So in Rasa, we practice with compassion. We really strive to rise up in love, and we transform. Like, there's a process, and I think that we don't really like the long journey. We want the quick fix.
Yeah.
And so I love getting new yogis into a space where they can learn about all of these branches of yoga, so they can see, like, okay, there's different ways, there's different tools for me to get to know myself and to start to really acknowledge those shadow sides that maybe I've disowned, And that I'm not alone in this. Mm-hmm. Being in the yoga room and prompting conversations with each other is the most beautiful thing. I love teaching more of a workshop style class where people can speak to each other and realize like, oh my gosh, regardless of what the outside package is, we are in the same struggle. We are thinking the exact same thing. And it starts to make things more available, mm-hmm. more tangible, and more digestible, right?
Yeah.
Instead of like, you do you, I'm going to do me, and see you next Tuesday.
Yeah.
it makes it cold.
Yeah.
And that's not what yoga should be. Mm-hmm. Yoga to me is therapy.
Same.
You're
that's
right?
Absolutely true. Yeah. I mean, really, though, that's the only... probably stillness I will take out of the day sometimes. And like, that's my time. And yeah, I definitely lay in there like as long as I want after class. Cause I'm like, I don't know when the hell I'm going to lay in meditation. Honestly, like that's where I got to work through my own resistance. But yeah, I mean, it's powerful therapy. It's like my family time. It's like my me time. It's my everything.
Well, good. I'm glad that you found it.
Thank you.
We found it together.
We found it together.
We're finally on a meet.
I'm so grateful for you. Oh my gosh. You've just shared so much, just so much knowledge today. And I'm just so grateful you're here. And how can people find you?
I'm all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Just like,
So you can find me on Instagram or Facebook, Leah Glanz. Or leahglanz.com is my website.
Can you spell that for people just in case?
Absolutely. LEAHGLANZ as in zebra. .com.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure people are going to want to reach out to you and see what you have to offer.
Yeah,
and...
come flow with me. Come sing with me. I'm a total mystic. So I love diving into mythic yoga flow. So really honoring the deities, not as like, sometimes that can be really scary for people.
Yeah.
Like thinking we're praising a god or goddess or something like that. But the deities like Ganesha, if you've seen Ganesha, like the elephant head and the body of a man, it is really, the deities are a reflection of ourselves, pieces of selves.
Oh, okay.
And so, you'll hear me speak about Ganesha, Durga, Kali, Shiva, all of these divine deities of yoga. But it is really a representation of self. Whoa. So one of my favorites is Hanuman, right? The monkey king, the monkey god.
Oh, okay.
And he looks like monkey, right? But he is actually in service.
Okay.
He takes leaps of love in service of those around him. And I think as yoga teachers, that's really what we are. We are, you might see him depicted in pictures of, he's a monkey and he's ripping his chest open.
Oh, wow.
To show his heart. And that's what we do as yoga teachers. We crack open and we share our hearts in a vulnerable nature in service of those that we truly love and care for, our students and our community. And that's so important, not to kind of hoard your practice or hoard the learning, but to be that bodhisattva of like the continual growth of community to share all of these things that we've learned. We all have our own traumas, our own experiences, our own challenges that we continue to face every day. And when we can be vulnerable enough to be open with those around us, we realize that we really are going arm in arm.
Yeah.
You know, we're not on this journey alone. Mm-hmm. And so many of us maybe have been in those times of our lives where we've felt very isolated, very alone, that we have nobody to turn to. We have nobody to talk to. Nothing can draw us out of that shadow space. And it's so important to find your community.
Yes.
To find people that can tell you, like, I'm here.
Yeah,
like,
genuinely.
Genuinely.
I'm here. I respect you. I love you. I support you.
And it takes time. So to not feel disheartened if you haven't found your kula, your community, your family yet, to continue to search and to look and explore, because, you know, once you've found that community, it makes all the world. Like, I'm an only child, and I don't have like a big family at all. Yoga is my family. Like, my hula is my family.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. And you're my family now. You're my hula. I'm so grateful for you. Well, I want to respect your time, and we're definitely going to have you on again very, very soon, because you just have so much beautiful knowledge to share with
the
tribe.
We'll sing some songs.
We can do some chants together, some sound healing. Yes. I mean, truly the mantras are healing through the sound vibrations. Yes, it's so powerful. Well, thank you again so much for being
here. Thank you for having me.
I love you. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Let's grow and show up with more compassion. I love you. If you enjoyed this podcast, reach out. You can leave a comment, review, subscribe. You can find me on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so much more. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, and have my own website. It's Celestial Goddess Podcasts. That is spelled CELESTIALGODDESS. Also, if you feel called to donate, please feel free. I appreciate all the support to grow and to reach more people. I'm just grateful we're growing together and we're doing the work together. So thank you for being here. I love you forever.